Thanks for listening to Chicago's Morning Answer podcast, sponsored by Signature Bank. Signature Bank takes pride in helping customers grow their business and provide unmatched banking expertise, custom financial solutions, and the industry's best technology. So whether you're a business looking for a deposit relationship or needs a ready source of financing, Signature Bank is the right bank for you. Call today at 773-467-5600 to hear how Signature Bank can help your business grow and thrive. Member FDIC, Equal Housing Lender.
This is Chicago's Morning Answer with Dan Proft and Amy Jacobson on AM 560, The Answer.
Good morning, Dan and Amy. And I don't do this often, but I'm compelled to do it this morning.
Yes.
I have to do a bit of a rant on the commute this morning and people driving in Chicago in slightly inclement weather. Yeah, there's a few puddles on the roadways.
No, it was dangerous. There was I hydroplaned twice. I mean, I don't know if you did in your
ride. Yeah, well, I have a car from this century, so that's on you.
just know that the right lane is flooded twice on the Kennedy, once near, right past the junction, and another time by O'Hare Airport.
Thank you, Chopper Amy.
Wait, I got to do the chopper sound. Wait, hold on.
Yeah.
Chopper one, it's chopper two. Isn't that good?
So, you know, I didn't have a good day yesterday.
Uh-oh. Because you went to Chicago Golf.
Yeah, and I stunk up the joint. So then I go home, I draw myself a warm bath, I put on some Brian McKnight, a bottle of Chardonnay, and I just fall asleep, you know, weeping in my bathtub. I get up.
It was that bad?
I do a little bit of show prep.
Uh-huh.
And I figure, okay, I'll stroll in here and do my duty for AM 560.
You just wanted to spend more time with us, too, I'm sure.
I don't understand the herd mentality on the roadways. I don't understand it generally, but especially when the weather gets bad. Everybody bunched up like they need a security blanket. This is why I despise the Kennedy as compared to, say, the Dan Ryan, which is just highway masquerading as a NASCAR race.
Exactly.
But I love the Dan Ryan.
Yes.
That's fine.
And you have more lane options.
They're
yes.
independent people on the Dan Ryan. On the Kennedy, it's all sheep
that
are huddled together.
Yeah. But they don't understand that that's dangerous driving. You got to pull away.
And so they get together and they block two lanes or three lanes. And if it's only two lanes, you can be sure one of the lanes will be a Subaru Outback doing 45 in the left lane. And it's just, and then you work around one cluster and then you're into the next cluster.
Yes. And then,
And something else too, these people, it's a little bit of rain. Yeah. These people driving with their hazard lights on, which, by the way, I appreciate because it says, look out for me. I don't know what I'm doing. Am I wrong on this? 312-642-5600, turnkey.pro answer line, 646-36-DA, turnkey.pro text line. And no, I'm not.
I was one of the ones with my hazard on.
Of course.
Well, because after the second hydroplane, I got out of the right lane for you and for everybody else, got in the middle lane, and I saw some trouble ahead, so I put on my hazards just to let people know. You know,
you don't
there's
want
some cautious.
Pull over to the pull. Get him. Figure out how to get one of the off ramps, or pull over to the side of the road and just wait it out. Then, if this is too frightening for you, but other people have lives to lead. Other people have things to do, places they're trying to get to.
I just got my hobo ride fixed, so I just wanted to make sure nobody hit me or I didn't hit anybody
else.
Well,
if you're just like joyriding on the Kennedy at 5 a.m. because you have nothing better to do, then just clear for people that you understand, you know, the flashing lights behind you.
Right.
You know, when I flash you, say, get out of the way. You're in the wrong lane.
Well, when are they ever going to finish paving the outbound Kennedy?
Well, that'll be done, you know, about the same time as they get the burn interchange done.
Oh,
so the
right.
early 2040s.
So I shouldn't hold my breath or anything?
This, I have to recall this. It's permanently emblazed in my memory. One of the great dissertations on Chicago roadways ever. This is from a blogger, Carl, at Barstool Sports. He breaks down all of the Chicago highways and byways, the Kennedy.
Okay.
Three lanes for the most populated part of the state. Mind-blowing stuff. Worst part is sitting in traffic watching the blue line race by you while you're doing the mental math to figure out how much faster those blue line passengers will get to their destination than you.
Awesome. So true.
Uh-huh.
Pondered on that millions of times.
The traffic boils down to people not knowing how to exit in the loop, and it makes its way all the way back out to Rogers Park.
True.
And he goes on to say, we were set up to fail with 90, and thanks to decades of poor infrastructure decisions, it appears the tune isn't changing anytime soon. For the commuters, take the blue line or the metro. You're a savage if you hit 90 in and out every single day. Get your head checked. Yeah, I agree with some of that. But no, he says it's the design. It's not the people. No, you
it's
do
a
not.
Combo.
Yeah, you cannot
it's
absolve the people behind the wheel.
But I'm a Kennedy girl. I have been my whole life.
Yeah.
Because I grew up, you're what, I-88, which used to be called I-5.
What is this, like, Northsiders' point of pride about a highway? Who cares?
I'm saying I've spent the majority of my life on the Kennedy.
Well, you just said.
Because I lived in Mount Prospect.
You said I'm a Kennedy girl.
I am. That's I'm not an Edens. I hate the, I can't stand Eisenhower. That's the
it's
worst
just a bizarre
one.
Way to say it. I'm not a
Kennedy. I'm a Kennedy girl.
Or I'm a Kennedy girl. Yeah.
It's I was real point there when tolls were 10 cents. They're supposed to go away.
And by the way, it should be better right now because they have that bifurcation around Cumberland to flush all the people yeah, that are going to O'Hare.
Yeah.
So, but it takes all the way there before you can open enough space, particularly when you have people doing 35 miles an hour hazards on pacing each other.
I was driving 40 the entire time.
I mean, honestly, I'm thinking about getting bumpers around my car so I can start knocking people off the road.
You didn't hide your plane at all? You didn't hit any water spots?
No.
Gosh.
I was
actually thinking that you might perish on the way.
I did the O'Hare Toll to Arlington Heights Road. In 4 minutes.
How fast were you going?
But it's usually three.
Answer the question. How fast were you going?
You do the math. Yeah, do the miles plus the time I gave you and see if you can solve that word problem. Ron in Salem, Wisconsin.
Hey, good morning. You're spot on, Danny. And then you get those traffic monitors that get in the fast lane and control traffic. But the worst one, I ride probably 3 hours a day on the expressway doing construction. And the Hebrew 500 is the worst. The Porsches and the Audis got to get downtown before the Gentile.
Okay. Thanks for the call, Ron. Speaking of my favorite expressway.
Oh, yeah, the Dan Ryan.
I'm a Dan Ryan boy.
No, you say you're a Dan Ryan guy.
Well, okay. You said girl. Why didn't you say you're a Kennedy woman? Dan Ryan, the Wild West of the United. This is from Carl, Barstool Sports. Yeah. The Wild West of the United States Interstate. There is no speed limit, only one rule. Get the blank out of other people's way. Totally.
Yep. And if you don't, they will hit you.
This is an all gas, no brake stretch of highway, and you better respect it. Bonus point. It is impossible to get a speeding ticket on the Dan Ryan. Pure lawlessness.
Yep.
Exactly.
So true.
Free on the Dan Ryan.
It's like you're in Wyoming. No speed limit. Just go.
Yeah.
Everyone for themselves. Have you ever even seen anybody pulled over ever on the Dan Ryan getting a ticket?
Not getting a ticket. I've seen people pulled over being put in cuffs, but that's a different story.
Yeah.
It's sometimes, you know, traffic disputes in terms of lane usage spill over into gunplay. But that's the price you pay for the freedom of the Dan Ryan. I'm willing to pay it. Tom in Oswego.
I wonder what he says about the Stevenson.
Hey, good morning, Danny and Amy. I'm on the road probably 4, 5, 6 hours a day. And I think they should have a designation on your driver's license that you could only drive during dry times.
I think that's a great idea.
Anytime there's no snow.
Great idea.
Oh, yeah, snow's another problem.
Snow, and it's like bumper cars out there.
Yeah, thanks for the call. That's a great idea. You should have to pass a test. But the problem is you can't have the state administer because they default to the Amy Jacobsons of the world.
Hey.
But you should only be able to drive in non-rush hour times.
Oh, okay, designated times.
Or, as I said in the show yesterday, we go back to pandemic rules. You know, it doesn't matter that there's that we're beyond it. You just stay in your home.
Pandemic? Okay. What do they say about the Eisenhower? Did he say anything about the Ike?
Yeah, the Ike's the worst. I mean, according to him and his rankings.
Yeah, it's never fun because that left exit for Austin and Harlem.
Well, that's the least of it. The Ike, according to Carl Barstool Sports, active shootings check, a decade worth of construction. Yep. How about one merge lane from the south? How about every inbound ramp after Sacramento being closed? How about the Hillside Strangler, a.k.a. when three expressways all merge into one gigantic cluster blank tollway? Overall, 290 is the single worst commuting experience known to mankind. It's extremely dangerous, save for about 3 hours in the entire day. The thing is completely effed start to finish. There's literally construction everywhere. Blue lines, exit ramps, merge lanes, express lanes. God help anyone who has to rely on 290 in any regular capacity. It has no identity, no soul, willing to do nothing but crush your spirits. Don't take the job that requires you to use this as your regular route to work, and in return, you can thank me for not hating your life.
Oh, my, that is brilliant.
It's not bad.
He forgot to mention the garbage. There's garbage everywhere in the 290. It's embarrassing.
The whole, well, this is a blank hole city and state now.
Well, I-57's horrible, too.
There's garbage everywhere. Nobody works for IDOT anymore? Nobody works for the tollway
What about, like, chain gangs and having people that are, you know, misdemeanors or DUIs go out and clean up like people used to? Wearing the little safety vests.
How about having the politicians do it?
Yeah,
They're the ones responsible. They have the power of the purse strings over these agencies. If they can't find anybody to do it, then they have to do it themselves. Chris Welch, Mr. Speaker, get over on 290 and start picking up trash.
Well, here's another thing, too. People, stop littering out of your cars. I saw a woman, these two chicks, they took up, you know, the steering wheel covers. And just threw it out on the inbound Kennedy.
Yeah, those were
No.
You just throw McDonald's bags out your window.
Oh, yeah. And then the Indian chief cries.
Yeah.
I'm crying now. I hate when people litter. Well, I mean, I want to go in their cars and strangle them.
It's public property. It means it's everybody's property. It means it's nobody's property. Steve and Gary.
Yeah, good morning, Dan and Amy. I got the favorite one on the back of the car. Stop honking. I'm reloading. Have a great day.
Yeah, thanks, Steve. What if I've already loaded and I'm in back of you while you're pacing doing 50 in the left lane? Yeah, that's a fun bumper sticker until it gets real, Steve and Gary. Vincent St. Charles.
Good morning, guys. Dan, you're 100% right.
Thank you.
Listen, if you can't drive, get out, take the side streets. Get out of my way. The speed limit says 35. You don't have to do 34 or 35. You could do 44-40, go over the speed limit. And IDOT does work. They put the sign that says bump, and they put the arrows that cause a traffic jam during about 3 to 5 o'clock during rush hour. That's when they work. Otherwise, they don't work.
Hey, Vince, you drive a truck?
Yes, tractor trailer. Yes.
Yeah. Vince, so here's an idea I had while I was trying to get around one of these clusters of sheep I'm talking about. Maximum Overdrive. The movie Maximum Overdrive. Get all of these tractor trailers, not to surround people in a cafe. Get all these have all these tractor trailers possessed to drive themselves and just roll over people. Like one of those, those events, those where they roll over cars and stuff.
Oh, the monster truck.
Sunday at the Rosemont Rising.
Yeah, I have no problem with that.
Monster truck these people. And send them right to Victory Auto Records.
A couple times. Oh, yeah. Yeah. Good idea.
Thanks for the call, Vince. I appreciate it. Pete and Racine. Hey, Pete.
Good morning. Say, I agree totally. And the people that drive 10 to 15 miles an hour under, after you finally get around them, it's amazing how they'll follow you all the way up to 90 miles an hour after they were driving 55.
Oh, yeah.
Amazing.
Oh, yeah. Thanks for calling, Pete. Here's one of my moves, and I'd encourage others to mimic.
Dan Prof, driving tips.
So somebody's pacing in the left lane. Uh-huh. Number one, they're slow and they're not getting out of the way. Number two, they're pacing the middle lane, so they're blocking. So you have to essentially slam on the brakes and get around both
lanes. So
I will get around. That happens without fail. And when I get around, then I stop.
Oh.
So you want to see pacing? You think you're going to go 45 in the left lane? I'm going to go 20. and I'm going to try, if you want to pull over, then we'll pull over. And then there's, you know, we're exchanging pleasantries through hand signals and so on and so forth.
It's called road rage.
Oh, you want to shut down traffic? You want to shut? Then let me shut down traffic.
Okay. Yeah.
How about that? How about we all get out and walk? Be faster.
Isn't there a state that if you drive slow, you have to be in the right lane or you get a ticket?
All these states, there's minimum speed limits.
Right. No, I know. But there's a state where if you're driving slow in the left lane, you can get pulled over and get a ticket.
This is Illinois. You can. Okay. Of course you can. And where are the state? I mean, to the extent state troopers still give speeding tickets, obviously it's always people like me. How about somebody pacing in the left lane creating a dangerous environment? Never. Never happens. I think we've had, actually I've mentioned this before, I think we did have a state trooper call in and say he did that, and he's my hero. Mm-hmm. He's the greatest American living, that state trooper.
Real man of genius.
I mean, I'm telling you, I've said this before, I'm opposed to capital punishment except as it pertains to this crime.
Excuse me, Mr. Prof. In 5 states, you're required to move right if you're blocking traffic.
Yeah. Okay. But there's
slow
also,
the
there's also minimum
the
speed limits where you can be ticketed. Yes. Mm-hmm. Craig in Mount Greenwood.
Oh, hey, Dan and Amy. Thanks for taking my call. Man, you're exactly right. But here's the thing. A lot of these people that are in the left like that, they're leftists. They love to just screw everything up and everything. And the thing, the reason I think they're leftists in that is because of their attitude. You go around them and everything, and if you get, and then by bad luck, you get stuck at the like next light or something like that, or you have to slow down for some reason, they catch up to you. There they are with the fingers and everything. They're so ticked off that you just wanted to get going, and they wanted to screw everything up, and you got around them. They got a bad attitude.
Yeah, well, that's right.
That's a slow poke law.
That's why we're going to get, I mean, this is, yeah, I don't know. I mean, probably not in my time. But at some point, this is just going to be Fury Road. This is going to be a Mad Max movie.
Indiana, Georgia, Tennessee, 3 of the 5. Slow poke law. You don't want to be a slow poke.
As you pass them, you have to turn and look to see who the hell is driving this way. You can't go to bed at night without putting a face to that miles per hour.
You've made the switch, and it feels so good. You switched to Chicago's Morning Answer on AM 560, The Answer. This is Chicago's Morning Answer with Dan Proft and Amy Jacobson on AM 560, The Answer.
Good morning, Dan and Amy. President Biden announcing yesterday afternoon that he and a handful of police clap Republicans had reached a deal on his infrastructure spend, about $1 trillion worth.
I'm pleased to report that a bipartisan group of senators, 5 Democrats, 5 Republicans, part of a larger group, has come together and forged an agreement that will create millions of American jobs and modernize our American infrastructure to compete with the rest of the world and own the 21st century.
Mm-hmm. And immediately after that press conference where everybody was slapping each other's backs, what we agreed on today is what we could agree on the physical infrastructure. There's no agreement on the rest. If this is the only thing that comes to me, I'm not signing it.
What?
We have a deal, and this is, you know, great news for America, except I'm not going to sign it. Pelosi said the same. We will not take up a bill in the House until the Senate passes the bipartisan bill and a reconciliation bill.
So 2 bills now.
Which could pass without a GOP support. And that's what the holdout is among the Democrat Socialists. At least one of their holdouts is reconciliation, because they want to pack a bunch of spend into one gambit and hopefully have these please clap Republicans, the Mitt Romneys and the Susan Collinses of the world, aid and abet this heist they're trying to pull. 312-642-5600, turnkey.pro answer line. 64636-DA, turnkey.pro text line. Surrender Republicans right into the rescue, or at least they're attempting to, which is, you know, appreciated by the left, but not so much that they're going to not do a bait and switch within a few minutes of announcing the bait, and then you get the switch.
Well, what's wrong with him? Why would he do that?
Why would who do what?
Biden. Come out, say we have a deal, and then there is no deal. Didn't he talk to Pelosi before he had his news conference yesterday?
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Because the bipartisan infrastructure plan includes $109 billion for roads, bridges, and major projects, $66 billion for passenger and freight rail, and a $15 billion for electric buses and facilities.
Great. That's what we need.
We need more choo-choos.
We need a lot more public transportation. Have you noticed? Uh-huh. We agreed on the price tag, the scope, and how to pay for it. It was not easy to get agreement on all three, but it was essential. Well, Senator Collins, you don't have an agreement. And it makes those please clap Republicans look even more pathetic than they normally do, doesn't it? Doesn't it? Oh, by the way, what they want, meaning the left, that these please clap Republicans are trying to aid and abet. You'll recall the Tax Foundation, their calculations of what Biden initially rolled out, the $2.2 trillion over 10, actually decreases jobs, despite what you heard from Biden. We'll continue to hear from him that this is some big job creator. In the long run, Tax Foundation finds the 101,000 fewer jobs as a result of this spend because, you know, government spending crowds out private investment. I don't know if anybody's heard. Doesn't seem like anybody's heard because both parties seem intent on continuing to expand the state and pile bad money after bad money under the rubric of infrastructure. You know, the infrastructure is crumbling. We need to spend. Yeah, well, I'll tell you what. Can we learn anything from all the infrastructure spending of the past? You know, part of the reason why you have these every couple of year big kitchen sink infrastructure bills is because so much of the money is frittered away on things that have very little market value and are nothing more than sprinkling the infield to buy votes. So maybe if we spent a little wiser, we would have infrastructure that is a little bit more sturdy. We could actually address substantive problems with respect to transportation and, you know, other legitimate manifestations of infrastructure. When I say infrastructure, I'm not talking about, you know, more money for childcare and everything else that was thrown into the original Biden proposal. But these Senate Republicans, boy, I tell you what. I know there's a lot of distress and disagreement with Mitch McConnell, Senate Republican leader, minority leader, a lot of it is well-founded. But you got to appreciate this gang of please clap Republicans that he has and how to manage, and frankly, including the John Thunes of the world, who's not much better, and how to manage a caucus that has your Susan Collinses and your Lisa Murkowskis and your Mitt Romneys, along with the Mike Lees and the Ted Cruzes and the Rand Pauls. You know, it's a complicated people management riddle that McConnell has to solve with each of these big gambits from the Biden administration.
312-642-5600, turnkey.pro, answer line 64636, type in DA, then a quick comment.
And then there's AOC, so there's criticism of this from the left, too. AOC, representing the Socialist Spice Girls, had this to say. This was a tweet storm she unleashed. The diversity of this quote-unquote bipartisan coalition pretty perfectly conveys which communities get centered and which get left behind when leaders prioritize bipartisan deal-making over inclusive lawmaking. This is why a bipartisan package alone isn't acceptable. The exclusion and denial of our communities is what D.C. bipartisan deals require. This is how you get the GOP on board. Don't do much, any, for the working class and low-income or women or POC communities or unions. We must do more. This isn't identitarian enough for her. Roads and bridges care what color or gender you are.
Yeah. Or sexual preference. Yeah. Don't care.
So what do you think? What do you think about your Republican Party? I they make it very difficult. My hope was that the initial constructive dialogue with Biden on this gambit, which was basically just dressed up a dressed up Green No Deal with a different name attached to it, would just be posturing. You know, you have to look constructive. You have to look like you'll entertain the idea and then slap it away. You know, like the Democrats do to Republicans, and even on their own agreement, they just did it. In a New York minute, they did it. But it was real. I mean, this was a question we were asking for weeks in the run-up to those inside the Beltway, Brett Baer and others. You know, is this really something that the Republicans want to get done, or is there they just want to give the appearance of playing ball so they don't look obstructionist because they're, you know, always afraid of being labeled as obstructionist and so on and so forth? You know what? We could use a little bit more obstruction. We could use a little education with respect to the American people to understand, you know, the Senate is a deliberative body, at least it's supposed to be, and obstruction is kind of sort of what we do because we don't want the government running fast to spend trillions of dollars nilly-willy. We want things slowed down. This is what the founders had in mind. So this obstruction, and this goes in both directions because Republicans will complain about it too when they're in power and they have an obstructionist Democrat minority. That's the deal here. You know what? Government needs to do less, needs to spend less. There needs to be more obstruction because there needs to be more thought put into how we're doing the things we want to do. And frankly, even the question before that, whether we should be even engaged in some of the things we're doing. Those questions are never asked. It's just, what's the price tag going to be? Mm-hmm. Biden says $2 trillion. We say $1 trillion. And we call that bipartisan compromise.
Oh, and Biden was so excited yesterday. Like, this is how we used to get things done in Washington. And
well, that's what
it
he's
up.
Been doing for 50 years.
I know, but
years.
Yucking it up with all the Republican senators.
Of course.
They walked out of the White House.
This is how it's been done for as long as Joe Biden's been there. And this is why we have $125 trillion in debt and unfunded liabilities.
Joe Manchin and Sinema were there, too, on the Democratic side.
Mike in Plano.
If you're keeping score.
Hey guys, I was speaking of infrastructure. This is kind of a local story, but a couple months ago, I was listening to a local sports gaming show, and they had a guy on there. He runs an advocacy group for trying to get more legalized gaming in Illinois, and he's basically a Democrat gambling degenerate. But he was, you know, going on his spiel. He was actually mad at Pritzker for not lightening up more gaming restrictions, and he wants about how Illinois is going to be the next Nevada. And then, of course, he went on to infrastructure, and he gave the party line about if we just raise more money for the government through gaming and along with pot money, we'll get those roads fixed and those bridges.
Oh, yeah, right.
Exactly. Like, what kind of delusions are what kind of delusions of grandeur are these people live in? How many times over the last decades have people in Illinois heard if we just raise more money for the government, we're finally going to get those roads and bridges fixed?
Well, thanks for the call, Mike. You're right. Why do they run this scam over and over again? Because people buy it over and over again. It's just like the lottery for funding schools, and then we'll never talk about funding schools again. And then it's riverboats to fund the schools and local communities, and then we won't have to talk about that anymore. And, of course, it's just – and then, you know, people have no institutional memory. They held no politicians accountable for their ruses, their lying – their scams, their profiteering politically and personally in some cases. And so, of course, they're going to run it again. Why would you stop running three-card Monty if people want to continue playing?
The stories you need to know to start your day. This is Chicago's Morning Answer on AM 560, The Answer.
Dan and Amy talking about the infrastructure deal, no deal, and the please clap Republicans trying to aid and abet the Democrat Socialists. Trojan Priestess Cassandra in Ravenswood joins us.
It's an infra slush fund bill that ought to be titled Grifters Guaranteed to Get, because this is a payoff to all these people who, from Kerry's climate panel to political insiders to politicians and their families, who invested when they thought Hillary was going to get elected in what's called the EVSE market. It's not just Granholm with her electric bus company. It's the charging stations that they want us to pay for. I don't remember Standard Oil getting us to pay for their gas stations. It's the wind turbines that the guy what's his name, Gallagly or something. He's on the climate panel. He used to be the chairman of Centerbridge. They bought Senvion, the biggest wind turbine manufacturer in Germany. All of these people are mad. When Goldman Sachs squawks it's not big enough, it's because they've gotten their clients into every one of the companies that is directly meant to benefit from this.
Yeah. How'd the market respond yesterday? Pretty positively, huh, Cassandra? Unfortunately, as you know, your prophecies are never to be believed, despite their truth. Thanks for the call. Appreciate it.
It's getting pretty deep.
Well, it's just a little Greek mythology.
I know.
You know, on a Friday, I figure a little Greek mythology. Speaking of President Biden, he's the president of the United States, in case you hadn't heard. And maybe you haven't heard because he whispers a lot.
He does. He tries to draw the reporters in by whispering.
I got them $1.9 trillion relief so far. They're going to be getting checks in the mail that are consequential. I wrote the bill on the environment. Pay them more. This is an employees bargaining chip now. What's happening?
And on infrastructure?
Yeah. Oh, yeah. You know what? It was a repeat of what you just said. But he keeps whispering, and it's really kind of goofy, and it makes me feel uncomfortable.
Well, I mean, you understand why he does it.
Why?
This is a device that really propelled him to fame. Cinematic fame. I don't think most people know this, but...
Is this Joe Biden?
In one of the great movies of all time.
If you build it, he will come. Go the distance. Ease his pain.
I wrote the bill. Same guy.
Pay them more.
It's news, opinion, insight. This is Chicago's Morning Answer on AM 560. The Answer. When you've got questions, he always has an answer. It's Sean Hannity, this afternoon at 2 on AM 560, The Answer.
We have to say happy birthday to Somersault.
Oh, yeah.
Somersault is 2 years old today.
The Somersault is Justin's dog. And
it's a girl named Somersault. Well, back Ben was taken in cartwheel.
And Justin, how did you come upon, you or the family, come upon the name Somersault?
The happy name.
It was a vet pick. They're the shelter we got her from. They had picked the name Somersault, and we decided that Somersault would be her name, therefore.
But you call her Summer, right?
I call her Summer. All the little iterations.
You know, I've been meaning to address this with you. I think, Justin, you and your family are a little too happy. And it is starting to bother me. Somersault. They named my dog, too, at the pound.
Oh, what did they name him?
I don't know, Brownie. Or something like that.
Yeah.
So, well, that's not going to be his name.
Or they pick months, like April. I had a cat that was April, and then you just changed.
But it is a cute dog.
It is a very cute dog.
I like the dog.
Somersault. Happy birthday.
Somersault.
What was Somersault's brother's name?
Geronimo.
Oh,
that's appropriation. Identify that pound. We're going to have to shut it down. All right. This is sort of remarkable. At least it is to me. Maybe everybody else will just say, oh, yeah, sure. Out of an abundance of caution. I understand.
Everything's out of an abundance of caution.
Richard Davis is the president and CEO of Make-A-Wish Foundation, or Make-A-Wish America. You know what Make-A-Wish does, provides wishes, grants wishes to critically ill children. It's a great organization,
I've done fundraisers for them. I've emceed events for them. It's a wonderful organization.
Amy Jacobson,
and I know you have too.
Amy Jacobson is the Make-A-Wish Foundation.
No.
I
went to 8 proms. It was Make-A-Wish.
Yeah. Yeah, that's all with Make-A-Wish. That's how many wishes she granted.
No,
8.
I'm saying it's a wonderful, and if you go and watch the kids and experience it with them, it's just, it's the happiest, they're in heaven.
You're the Jerry Lewis of the Make-A-Wish Foundation. I got it. Richard Davis is the president and CEO. He exists because of Amy Jacobson.
Please stop it.
This is what he had to say about Make-A-Wish resuming their wonderful work of granting wishes.
Today, we're making a big step forward in delivering hope to you, our Wish kids, and our Wish families. I'm excited to share that Make-A-Wish will resume granting air travel wishes within the United States and its territories, as well as granting wishes involving large gatherings for vaccinated Wish families, as soon as September 15th of 2021. All wish participants, including your wish kid and any siblings, will need to be 2 weeks past completion of either a one-dose or a two-dose vaccine. While we won't ask for proof of vaccination, we'll ask for any adult participant to sign a letter of understanding that certifies that they and any minors participating in the wish are vaccinated and understand the risks of traveling at this time. We understand that this change affects many families whose children aren't eligible for the vaccine yet, and also know that there are families who aren't ready to get the vaccine, and we respect everyone's freedom of choice. This decision was made in keeping with our long-standing policy to rely on medical professionals to ensure that the wishes we grant are considered safe and appropriate, given that the wish kids are some of the most vulnerable among us. Granting wishes that involve domestic travel and large gatherings, which include theme parks, represent the start of our long-awaited return to normal. However, cruise and international travel wishes will not resume for a significant period of time.
Did Richard Davis thread the needle appropriately to resume operations and get back to granting wishes, or is excluding children and family members who are not vaccinated, is that inappropriate? 312-642-5600, turnkey.pro, answer line 646-36DA, turnkey.pro, text line. This is the new segregation, the vaccinated and the unvaccinated.
I mean, these kids are critically ill and dying. No wish for you. It would exacerbate their condition if they got vaccinated. So the family's being judicious and not doing it to them. But he said they're not going to ask for proof of vaccination. But still, it's like you're turning your back on the kids who need you the most. Well, once again, we're doing this to our children.
Well, they're not going to ask for proof, but they're going to ask for the parents to verify vaccinations. And obviously, you don't want to suborn people lying about their status. So it's six of one, half dozen of the other.
It's just not right.
Should unvaccinated children? I mean, I understand now that you're talking about children with comorbidities, clearly. But is having children vaccinated when the Make-A-Wish kids, obviously, the prognosis is dire, right?
So you're getting turned away from your favorite wish as a final memory on this planet? I mean, have a little heart.
Yeah, I think that's...
you know, like how they try to make it nicey-nice with the soft music behind the announcement. Like, we're here, we're going to resume, but you need to be vaccinated.
Right, we respect the fact that under 12 has not been green-lighted, and we respect the fact that some parents aren't ready to vaccinate their kids if they're 12-plus, but we're just not going to allow you to be eligible, your child to be eligible for a wish being granted. Is that striking the right balance?
312-642-5600, turnkey.pro, answer line 64636, type in DA, then a quick comment.
Greg in Palos. Hey, Greg.
Yeah, hello. Yeah, good morning.
Morning.
Yeah, hey, my comment is that I was at a golf outing a few years ago, and, you know, I don't agree with their stance on this vaccination thing, but I was at a golf outing a few years ago, and they granted a wish to a grandson of the Will County president, a guy named Larry Walsh at the time.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, they're just a political operative organization. And, you know, it's just phony. So I just like to make that comment that, you know, they don't care about anybody other than the ones that serve them, serve their benefits. So,
all right.
Anyways, thanks.
Thanks for the call.
I got
Greg.
Raffled off once for $5,000, and the $5,000 went to Make-A-Wish Foundation.
You got raffled off for what? To do yard work?
No,
or
to
what?
Go on a date.
Oh.
Was it that place on the north side? What's that? Where was I? Not Chicago Theater. I don't know. I dressed up in a gown, and people bid on me, and I walked around, and I got a date with this guy. I can't remember his name. He was from University of Chicago. But he paid $5,000, and it was a Make-A-Wish event. I took one for the team, Dan.
Are you sure it was in the Admiral Theater that you're thinking of?
Stop it. No, come on. It's at Theater Park West.
Oh,
Park West.
Park West, of course.
Yes.
Yeah, Park West.
Thank
it was
you.
All on the up and up.
Yeah.
Of course, obviously. Mark in Hoffman Estates.
Morning. I'm just curious, is Make-A-Wish accepting donations from people who are not vaccinated?
Oh, that's a good question.
Oh, stick it right to them, huh?
Thanks for the call, Mark. Do you like this Scarlet U, unvaccinated? You think this is the way that we should go? And I guess the argument would be, well, no, I'm respecting people's wishes, but I just, you know, we're making a decision as an organization. That's fine. Private organization, you can make that decision. I'm not suggesting that Make-A-Wish can't. I'm asking whether you think that is a good decision. Is this the direction you want the culture to go? Is this the direction you want social norms to go? And this isn't about the law. This is about social norms and how we interact with one another.
And this fall, folks, if you think there's not going to be vaccinated and unvaccinated classrooms and sections of classrooms, oh, just wait. It's coming.
Greg in Jefferson Park.
Hey, good morning. My sister used to be on the women's board of the Make-A-Wish Foundation. I've been to, I don't know, at least 7 or 8 of those balls. And, you know, we no longer are involved with them, haven't been for about a good 15 or so years.
Why?
They changed their tune on a lot of stuff. My sister got tired of dealing with the politics of having to set up the balls and all that stuff and, you know, put a lot of time, a lot of effort, cash and everything else into going to those balls. And used to sit across from Steve McMichael for 3 years. I'm sorry to hear about him.
Yeah.
But, it ain't what it used to be, the Make-A-Wish Foundation, that's for sure. You guys have a good weekend.
Thanks for the call, Greg. You know, the Robert Conquest's second law of politics, just remember this. I've referenced it before, but it applies here. Any organization not explicitly and constitutionally conservative will sooner or later become leftist. And you say, well, we're not in politics. Oh, you are. Everyone is, because we're talking about cultural and social norms, which necessarily implicates political philosophy and thus politics. Any organization that is not explicitly and constitutionally conservative will sooner or later become leftist. Clay and Wheeling.
Morning, Dan. I mean, it's been a little while since I talked to you guys, but my comment is the Make-A-Wish Foundation going to be granting wishes to kids that now have inflammation around their hearts from the vaccine? Because those numbers are still reported in. Mm-hmm. Thanks, guys.
Thanks for the call, Clay. Yeah, the myocarditis. By the way, there was a story out yesterday. The FDA is expected to move rapidly to add warning labels to Pfizer and Moderna vaccines following the emergence of heart inflammation cases after receiving the non-traditional mRNA jabs, according to the agency's Dr. Doran Fink.
Yep, so they're going to go print a bunch of labels.
So it's an emergency use authorization, and we're about to have FDA warning labels about myocarditis and pericarditis, and yet a kid who's dying is sidelined by Make-A-Wish.
Great point.
Mm-hmm.
Oh, Mendota.
Ed in Elk Grove, sorry.
Hi, thanks for taking my call. My son was diagnosed with leukemia about 4 years ago as an adolescent. We used Make-A-Wish. He did a Australian cruise. And while I have disagreements with how some of the stuff with the vaccine goes, I am a big fan of Make-A-Wish, and because of his leukemia, he had, immune problems and had to be vaccinated, and the whole family had to be vaccinated for things in order for them to travel and to be safe. So I don't think that it's an apples and oranges. I mean, I think it's an unfair comparison with that.
Well, you had to be vaccinated. You and the whole family had to be vaccinated for what?
Well, it started with flu as soon as he started chemotherapy, everybody in the household that had exposure to him had to be vaccinated. Plus, his cruise was in Australia, so there were certain vaccine requirements for him to be able to go to Australia for his vaccination. So I personally have political beliefs that are very conservative, but I think that Make-A-Wish gets a pass, at least for Ed.
All right. Thanks for the call, Ed.
Yeah,
appreciate it. And so I say, yeah, I mean, again, I'm not anti-vaccine. I'm not an anti-vaxxer, generally speaking.
Well, do you ever get the flu shot?
No. But, I mean, I got it once, like, as a radio bit.
Okay. But when you were a kid, your mom got you your vaccine.
Yeah, yeah. I'm not anti-vaccine. And but the zeitgeist behind this, the get vaccinated, end of discussion, no nuance, no texture. We've talked about this a lot, including with medical professionals, including with a lot of public health officials and medical doctors that have just as good, if not better, credentials than all the TV doctors that we're supposed to listen to unquestioningly. And they say no for kids. And now we're talking about
sick. The WHO says no for kids.
And we're talking about sick kids here, and it is a little bit different. And I understand the point that Ed from Elk Grove made, and that's fine. But to categorize vaccinated and unvaccinated the way that Make-A-Wish is doing, rather than to do this on a case-by-case basis, perhaps, because all the kids don't have the same illnesses. The dynamics are different in every case. So why not say we're going to make those decisions on a case-by-case basis? We're not going to preclude anybody, but we're going to make decisions on a case-by-case basis in consultation with doctors and the family. Why not do it that way? Why so quick to segregate? Mike in Merrillville.
Hi, Dan and Amy. How are you this morning? Thanks Good. For having me on.
Yep.
Wanted to just put a little information out there. There is a children's charity organization in Chicago that's called Starlight Foundation.
Mm-hmm.
That I'm not sure what if they have segregation programs such as Make-A-Wish, but that's a shame that they're going to do that to children that are already struggling enough as it is.
Thanks. I'm sorry. Go ahead, Mike.
Yeah, just to put more of a burden on them and their parents is just, you know, it feels like we're being catapulted back 150 years.
Thanks for the call, Mike. The other Mike, the one on the north side.
Hey, good morning. Thanks for taking my call. Did this guy from the Make-A-Wish Foundation graduate from the Blagojevich School of Government shaking down sick kids? Except this guy's saying, we respect your right to choose, but we're going to discriminate against your sick, dying kid. Dan, please give me this guy's name and address. Let me pay him a visit.
Okay.
And Amy.
Yes.
And Amy,
yes,
all ma'am. The gals mm-hmm. at the Lesbian Speakeasy
yeah.
I went to during the, they are very excited that you've discovered dental dams. They're looking forward to meeting you.
Okay.
And we'll get more than $5,000. We will definitely get more than $5,000 out of these gals.
Oh,
thanks, Mike.
Hey. Thanks.
He's really hung up on the dental. That's the second dental dams reference yeah. he's made this
well,
week.
Well, I had no idea that that product even existed.
And now you do.
Yeah.
And Mike
and I need to
and
meet
his friends are really excited about it.
I really need to meet his girlfriends because I was going to meet him one day, but something happened. I couldn't.
Mark in Libertyville.
Hey, morning, guys. Hey, two-part question. Are you still in jeopardy of getting the virus if you have been vaccinated? So why would there be a concern if you've been vaccinated? Isn't that the whole point of getting vaccinated to prevent you from getting the virus? And my second part would be, and this is, there's a, you know, back during the, back in October or when one of the convention or the national debates was going on and Kamala Harris said that she would absolutely not get it if Trump was going to be administering it. Now she did nuance that by saying if the doctors said it was okay, but I have an issue with that you know, here she's reaching millions of people on a national stage and she's saying unequivocally she would not get it. Well, I feel the same way with Biden. If Biden in this administration and our government's pushing it, I'm not doing it just for that reason alone.
Mm-hmm.
But I guess more importantly, the other part would be my first question is, isn't that the whole point of getting the vaccine is to prevent you from getting it from other people that may have it?
Well, thanks for the call, Mark. So we talked about this with Dr. Robert Malone the other day. And, you know, understand it's not a force field around you, the vaccines, with respect to COVID. It is something that that enhances your immune system ostensibly and protects you from serious illness associated
right.
with
so if,
the with the infection.
So one of my neighbors, she's an autoimmune disorder. She got vaccinated early on, got both doses. she got COVID, but she didn't have to go to the hospital.
Right.
She had a slight fever.
Right.
And her doctor said if she hadn't gotten the vaccine, she would probably have been hospitalized.
And so this is the story here, too. I mean, so with Make-A-Wish and just in general, generally speaking, you can still get it. You can still transmit it. But it is the promise is that it will be less severe.
Mm-hmm. So now you're going to get a vaccine, right?
And then the issue is the risk profile for each individual person, and particularly here, since we're talking about Make-A-Wish and we're talking about kids, and we're talking now, generally speaking, about kids and vaccines, what's the risk profile? And this was the conversation we had this week where, you know, there's some indication that it is more risky for particularly teenage boys. At least this is what is being suggested by experts in the field at this point, like the guy from the Genetic Institute at the University of College London, that the risk profile is higher, the risk is higher associated with getting vaccinated versus getting infected. So this is the layered conversation you have to have rather than get vaccinated or vaccinated over here and unvaccinated over there.
Well, after our pastor said we're not going to have vaccinated sections in church, we have vaccinated. If you're vaccinated, you don't have to wear a mask and you can sit in these two quadrants. If you're not vaccinated, you sit over here. And if you're vaccinated and you still want a social distance, I call it the scaredy cat section, you could sit in the northwest quadrant of the church.
The Scarlet
this is what's
Use.
Life. Yeah.
Donning the Scarlet Use is next.
Connect with Dan and Amy using the AM560 mobile app. Download it today at 560theanswer.com/mobile. This is Chicago's Morning Answer with Dan Proft and Amy Jacobson on AM 560, The Answer.
Top of the morning, Dan and Amy. Peggy Noonan in the Wall Street Journal writing about the mayoral primary election in New York City this past Tuesday. New York Democrats take a stab at reality. And as you talked about, the dynamic in New York City, sort of interesting because it's sort of the same dynamic in Chicago and really Illinois generally, since there's no Republican Party in either state, effectively, especially Illinois, even more so than New York. And it's old-time Democrat machine politicians versus Marxists. That's your choice. Adams representing the former and his main opponents, like the AOC-backed candidate Willie representing the latter. Noonan picked up on something from Adams' election night speech. How dare those with their philosophical and intellectual theorizing and their classroom mindset talking about the theory of policing. You don't know this. I know this. I'm going to keep my city safe. That was the Adams candidacy and really the primary on the generally speaking, but where the victor will come from ultimately, and that's on the Democrat Socialist side.
You don't think Curtis Sliwa has a chance?
I don't think so. I hate to break it to you, but it was a referendum on crime, and the only thing that people cared about with respect to Eric Adams, he was on the New York City Police Department for 2 decades.
Yeah, but what kind of cop was he when he was on the police department? Because I was listening to Sean Hannity yesterday, and they said, no, his best friend is Al Sharpton. I worked with him on the force. And
yeah, I know. He's pivoted.
He's pivoted.
He was, for example, talking about critical race theory in the beginning, positively, of his candidacy, and then switched midway through as he saw where the market opportunity was. So, again, this is nobody's falling in love with Eric Adams. But understand the choice. You have a choice between someone like Eric Adams and an extension of Warren Wilhelm, a.k.a. Bill de Blasio. So that's your choice. The other thing that she said about Adams, not that I necessarily that this is genuine, because I don't take anything at face value with these people. I'm talking about politicians. But he was on the street, so it could be. She writes, here's something I think helped Adams. What is always missing from the public discourse on crime is simple compassion. It's weirdly absent. Being the victim of a violent crime can change a life and bring untold long-term woe, real physical and psychological repercussions, And she suggests that Eric Adams spoke to that. And I think that's fair. And we've talked about it with analysts like Rafael Manguel over at Manhattan Institute. And we just talk about it here because it's just commonsensical. We just talk about shootings, 3,000 people shot, 300 people, and then that would be a low number, murdered right. in Chicago. And we just talk about them like they're statistics. But you understand the ripple effect of being shot? That is a catastrophic injury if you survive. Or being murdered. That is a catastrophic event, not just for the victim, but for, you know, the entire circle around that victim. And it is... We do sort of move in the direction of dehumanization. It's just another carjacking. It's just another murder. It's just another shooting. It's just one more to add to the stat columns. And Eric Adams humanized that effectively, humanized the victims effectively as part of his candidacy. For more on all this, we're pleased to be joined again by Chadwick Moore, contributing editor for The Spectator. Chadwick, thanks for joining us. Appreciate it.
Hey, good morning. Glad to be here.
Good morning. And so Eric Adams' apparent victory, and I know some people think that Willie will end up will end up winning when all the votes are tallied, but he looks to be in a pretty strong position. And really just what you see going on around the country, that rapid response force in Portland that resigned and so forth, and Joe Biden coming out this week to talk about crime, Dem socialists doing a real pivot on violent crime as it is spiking in major cities across America, even over the spike that happened last year.
Right, exactly. And I think you're right that this election was a referendum on crime here in New York, because New Yorkers are just finally fed up that they aren't going to take this anymore. But what interesting timing. Why now? I mean, you know, we forget that our major cities, especially here in New York, and particularly, you know, cities on the West Coast, it wasn't just coronavirus and the George Floyd riots that when they started to decline. They've been on the decline for several years now under these far-left progressive mayors. You know, here in New York, vagrancy and homelessness has been up for many, many years. You know, crime has been slowly creeping up. Of course, last year it just skyrocketed up, especially with all the defund the police rhetoric. And, you know, it's almost like you see this with the Democrat Party and with these totalitarians in general is it's create a problem, like they did with crime, with this rhetoric, from the very top of the party about defunding the police and letting rioters out of jail. Create a problem, prolong the suffering, and then come in with the solution. So you're once again this hero and you know, hoping that people have the memories of Goldfish and won't remember that this is something that you, as a Democrat, as the Democrat Party, created and allowed to fester, intentionally putting people in these situations and keeping your cities and your districts in, you know, a miserable, dangerous place.
And so, I mean, what's your prognosis on Eric Adams? Is he going to make overtures to the Wileys of the world and the other Marxist candidates in the race and try and pull it all together? Or is he going to be somebody that tries to follow more the Giuliani-Bloomberg approach, at least as it pertains to crime?
I'd like to hope he does that with the Giuliani-Bloomberg approach, but I don't think he will. You know, it's sort of like I have this feeling that maybe he might be kind of this Obama-like figure who, while campaigning, seemed very rational, very moderate, tried to reach out to both sides, tried to speak to, you know, normal people, what they want, and then comes in and just a total communist and, you know, surprised many people, you know, because he seems so different on the campaign trail. I don't think that if Adams is the nominee, we're going to see this Marxism, the social justice stuff, this Wiley de Blasio approach while he's campaigning. But once he's in office, and we're assuming that whoever the Democrat is will win, it's who knows. And you're right to mention that he's got some alliances with Al Sharpton and people like that. So it's anyone's guess, really. He was a Brooklyn Borough president before, and I don't think he was, you know, particularly vocal in the news much when he was in that role. So we don't really know a ton about what's going on underneath the surface. He has, you know, made overtures to critical race theory before in the past and things like that.
And what about Andrew Yang? Where is he going to move and what's he going to run for next?
Yeah.
Because he was a contender
so
at one point.
And also, is he ever going to put on a tie, or is he just too cool for that?
Millennial.
He's just way too cool. I'm so happy Andrew Yang didn't win. The man knew nothing about New York. He was just basically a tourist. And, you know, of course, all these journalists who are also basically just tourists loved him. he reminded them of roommates with in college or what have you. I don't know what it'll be up here. Maybe he'll start learning how to give directions. Maybe he'll start learning what a bodega is. Maybe he'll start learning how to pronounce Houston Street. Maybe he'll start trying to, you know, figure out this city that he tried to run and fail at.
Hey, you know, I went to Skidmore. I know everything there is to know about New York City, right? That sort of attitude. I love that characterization. That's very good. Did you have time? Because I didn't catch it. The Skittles, the candy company, they did a live Q&A for LGBTQ+ rights for Pride Month. And I didn't catch Skittles' take on LGBTQ and Pride Month. I don't know if you caught it. Because I mean, it's important to know what Skittles is thinking.
Well, rainbow colors like the flag.
Exactly. Yeah.
That's why I'm sure they
Why do they have to? They already have the rainbow year-round. I don't get it. I mean, they introduced the new colors of the Pride flag in their Skittles packet for this year, like the black and the brown and the pink and the blue.
Well, I mean, this is probably the most important example of corporate leadership since Starbucks baristas were tasked with curing racial discord, which they effectively achieved, as we know.
That's right. And Skittles works every day with the Taste the Rainbow campaign to make sure we have LGBT equality. I'm not sure if they're selling Skittles in the Middle East and if they've had to change their packaging for that. Maybe looking in the opposite direction as corporations usually do. But this corporate pandering you see everywhere it's so funny because you even see gay people are just so fed up with it, and even left-wing gay people are like just over the corporate pandering and marketing of Pride Month.
Wow. Well, I mean, but to be fair, I mean, doesn't the gay community, the LGBTQ+ community, I mean, how often do you hear this, Chadwick? Where would we be without Skittles?
a few trips to the dentist, I would imagine, is where we'd be.
Right.
All right, so Chadwick Moore, you're in New York City. Are people still wearing masks everywhere?
Oh, my goodness. I mean, it's progress. If I see two people on the street, you got to have a mask on, like the other day. And I'm like, wow, I guess things are changing a little bit. There's still the mask everywhere, on the subway, outside. I don't get it. The other day, I walked into a store and they asked me to wear a mask. And I said, no thanks, I'll go somewhere else. So our businesses actually aren't doing the mask thing. Bizarrely, it's people outside where you see it the most. I don't understand it. You can go into businesses and some people won't be wearing the mask. It's very bizarre. I don't know why they don't want to give it up. I don't know if they just age and, I don't know, New Yorkers like feeling anonymous. Maybe they're, I don't know what's going on, but it's freakish. It's almost like a fetish at this point. They're really resisting getting rid of this disgusting, sloppy piece of cloth that they slap on their face and then out of their pockets all day long. I don't get it. It's really strange. It makes me feel like I'm living in the Twilight Zone and that I don't know these people at all.
Don't come to Chicago because we've got some of the same ones.
Here's an interesting study just out. This is by Department of Psychology and Brain Sciences researchers at UCSB, University of California, Santa Barbara. And I haven't had time to look at the methodology of the study, but it produces a result that's reflected in reality, so I'm going to accept it for the purposes of this discussion. They looked at the dehumanization that occurs by partisans in politics and how it erodes democratic norms, and they specifically looked at the 2020 presidential election. Here's one of the findings of the study. Despite the socially progressive and egalitarian outlook traditionally associated with liberalism, the most liberal Democrats actually expressed the greatest dehumanization of Republicans. This suggests that political ideology can at times be as much an expression of social identity as a reflection of deliberative policy considerations. Oh, you don't say. You don't say that the left is really in the business of dehumanization. But I think importantly, and perhaps conservatives don't discuss this enough to understand the appeal that needs to be made and understand the enemy they're dealing with. The enemy, and the Marxist, the cultural Marxist, the new Marxist, this is their identity. It's not just policy preferences. I mean, they're identitarians. Understand that it's not just their non-behavioral characteristics. It's also their philosophy that is part of their identity. And so to disagree with them is to attack their identity. That's how they receive it. Thus, the response is dehumanization of people who have differences of opinion on policy.
Yeah, what's the old saying is that you know, Republicans think Democrats are people of bad ideas, and Democrats think Republicans are bad people who happen to have ideas.
Right.
And it's the dehumanizing aspect of that. I wonder if this is just where it gets people. It almost speaks to kind of a human need to have faith in something larger than yourself. And when you take away God from that, or you don't have kids until you're in your 50s, or, you know, this sort of, then your faith becomes your politics, and your meaning in life becomes your politics, and you hold it so dear to you that any kind of anything that insults it or challenges it, it's like this deep emotional reaction. And we see this all the time. If you've ever gotten to a conversation with a liberal that starts off seemingly pleasant and that you might have a nice debate, and then as soon as you start making sense, they just freak out, pour out of the room, all you names. It's very emotional for these people. It's tied to their identity and to their meaning of the world. It's like, it's so important to them. And so, of course, everything goes into that, and anyone who disagrees with them is evil in their mind.
He is Chadwick Moore, contributing editor for The Spectator. Chadwick, thanks as always for joining us. Appreciate it.
Thank you. My pleasure.
Thanks. And he joined us on our turnkey.pro answer line.
Hear about the big stories of the day, then talk about them right here on Chicago's Morning Answer on AM 560. The Answer. If you're looking for the latest news, insight into what it means, and the sharpest opinion, there's only one station in Chicago where you can turn, and it's this one. We're AM 560, The Answer.
Top of the morning, Dan and Amy. Do we have a work problem in this country? Or is this just a wage problem? You can't find workers, small business owners? Too bad, so sad. Hike your wages for your employees, and that problem solves itself. That's what Joe Biden says.
Oh, yeah, I say he said that.
I'm not being critical, y'all. I really mean this. It was legitimate questions you're asking me. Asking me, well, you know, guess what? Employers can't find workers. I said, yeah, pay them more. This is an employees bargaining chip now.
And Joe Biden went on to say,
oh, yeah.
Ease his pain of low wages. That's the line. You're hearing it from the punditry on the left. Jordan Weissman writing in Slate, slate.com. Everyone's quitting their job. Hooray! He writes, when a lot of workers are quitting, it's usually considered a sign that the economy is doing well, since people typically aren't willing to leave one job unless they're pretty confident that they can find another. At least he admits that, yeah, things are a little bit more complicated now because a lot of people are leaving their jobs or staying out of work because of the unusually high unemployment benefits that they're receiving.
And then Biden extended the moratorium on evictions for one more month.
This is all look at the silver linings. This is government policy that is going to produce unforeseen but nonetheless positive benefits, Jordan Weissman. The extra financial cushion is probably giving some people the courage to try entrepreneurship. Pursue a fun lark like becoming a professional video game streamer. Sure. Why not underwrite everybody's hopes and dreams? Hey, you know, take a chance. Spin the wheel. What did you really want to do before you were grinding it out at a retail establishment that you didn't really enjoy? Because everybody has to be completely fulfilled in order to work. Or they shouldn't work at all, and everybody else should pay for them to find their niche. That seems to be the philosophy. It's an interesting one, sort of a juvenile one, but interesting nonetheless. For more on the details of the impact of the policies pursued, pleased to be joined again by Casey Mulligan, professor of economics at University of Chicago. He served as the chief economist of the White House Council of Economic Advisors in 2018 and 2019. And he's the author of You're Hired, Untold Successes and Failures of a Populist President. Casey, thanks for joining us again. Appreciate it.
Good morning, guys.
So this piece that you and your colleague from the Texas Public Policy Foundation, Mr. E.J. Antoni, did for the Wall Street Journal that just sort of quantifies what we're talking about here, because we need numbers in order to respond to what Joe Biden and others are saying, that we just have a wage problem, not a work problem.
Yeah, we understood this bonus for what it is. It's a bonus. It goes on top of other things. And so you often they'll say, well, you know, nobody wants to survive on $300 a week. Well, $300 a week is not what you get paid when you're out of work. That's a bonus. And so we found that two adult families can be collecting over $100,000 a year. If these were to extend for a year, over $100,000. The bonus is part of it. We also, believe it or not, had an unemployment system before Biden came along, and that is kicking in cash. You have various programs to pay for your health insurance, which Biden expanded. You have food stamps. You have various tax credits. And this all adds up to real money, and you end up getting paid more than most workers are getting paid, which is a economic perverse situation, and it's also totally unfair that the people doing the work get less.
And there's some state, you know, some governors in certain states that said, no, we don't want the extra unemployment added on. Can you talk about that?
Yeah, I mean, because you have these other programs that we already had a safety net there for people, Biden's bonuses are putting people on these programs longer, the old programs. And so the old programs are going broke, and not to mention that it's totally perverting the marketplace, and you know the businesses and the consumers are clamoring to get back to normal, so that these Republican governors have taken that step. You know, they lose federal money from their state, but at least they can stop having their existing programs headed on a fast path to bankruptcy.
Right. I mean, the question, I suppose, for those who are promoting the enhanced benefits and celebrating people quitting their jobs or choosing not to work until the benefits run out is, if this is such a good idea, then why don't we extend it in perpetuity? If you can just do this by waving a wand, and as you point out, in blue states that haven't suspended the $300 bonus, the average annual unemployment insurance benefit for a family of four with two parents out of work is more than $72,000, which is higher than the median household income in the United States. So if you can just do that by fiat, as we've been doing that, then why ever stop?
Yeah, you wouldn't want to stop if you had that kind of magic. But wages come from productivity. And that all these schemes that Biden's doing is actually making our workers less productive. Everything's getting rearranged on a temporary basis, even if we're on a permanent basis, to try to minimize damage from government rules and regulations. And that makes our workers less productive, and then they're going to get less paid less. You know, the whole market is to create value, and then that value can be handed over to employees. You're not creating value anymore. There's nothing there for employees to have.
So I was talking to a friend of mine who runs a manufacturing concern in the south suburbs of Chicago. He's like, I need 15 more line guys. I can't get anybody to work. I've upped my wage to about like to definitely north of $15 an hour, maybe like $18 an hour, $18.50 an hour. Still can't get anybody to work. And he doesn't understand. It's like, I thought this was about creating jobs. I thought people want jobs and a living wage and so on and so forth. And the response, of course, is, well, the response from the left here is, of course, well, if $18.50 is not the market clearing wage, then you just have to keep going up. He's like, well, I can't keep going up because I can't make the numbers work to operate my business if I go up any further. And this is still, you know, reconfiguring things even to make $18.50 work, in quotation marks. But there's just no appreciation for the worker to productivity connection that you just made. It's just, hey, you can't, people aren't coming back, then just keep going up and up and up until they do.
Yeah, I mean, that's not going to work. I mean, that's just going to make things more expensive. That people buy. The things that unemployed people buy will be more expensive. The things employed people will buy. So the purchasing power of your wage is not going to increase on that path. Biden just doesn't make any sense. But he's pressured by people in his party, I think, to say this kind of nonsense.
Well, the other thing, just to put a fine point on it, the idea that all of economics, I mean, this is sort of a something that was articulated by Bastiat, that all economics should be viewed through the eyes of the consumer.
That's right.
And just develop the why that is. You know, give us people a perspective, because, you know, we don't do a good enough job. We need to do a better job of doing the dot connecting worker to worker and productivity. Raising the costs of inputs raises the costs of outputs, reduces your purchasing power. We just don't do a good enough job of articulating this, I think.
Yeah, I mean, a big purpose for working is to have a standard of living. You know, to have your kids taught in school, to have a car to drive, a house to live in, and those are real goods and services that have to be produced. And so the market is doing all these things together, and you know, in a dreamland of Biden's, these would be separate, and people could get paid a lot without producing a lot. But that just doesn't happen in the real world.
So, what should President Biden do today to make this better?
Resign.
Or to try to get the economy back to normal.
Well, ending these emergency programs, the bonus program and the health insurance programs, the emergency's over. End them. It's a pretty straightforward thing to do. That's what he should do. I'm doubtful that he'll do it.
He is Casey Mulligan, professor of economics at University of Chicago, served as the chief economist of the White House Council of Economic Advisors in 2018 and 2019. The book, You're Hired, Untold Successes and Failures of a Populist President. Casey, Professor Mulligan, thanks for joining us as always.
Have a good day.
Thank you. And he joined us on our turnkey.pro answer line.
Listen to podcast of Dan and Amy from the AM560 mobile app. Download it today at 560theanswer.com/mobile.
Hey, I got something you can talk about with shock jock Paul Vallis when he joins you in the next hour when I leave to go
golfing.
Practice my swing.
You think you're going golfing in this? I just walked Somersault, Justin's dog, who's here today on a field trip.
Yeah.
Look at my hair.
Well, we'll see. Maybe like clears by 11. The Oak Park Country Club member guest playing in this weekend, so we got to get it
in. Oh, that's right.
Got to get it in. All right. You know the drill now, and you're seeing more of it. Ryan Cooper writing in the week. Many school districts across the country are in the grips of a full-blown moral panic, supposedly over something called critical race theory. Fabiola Sinias writing in Vox.com. Conservatives have launched a growing disinformation campaign around the academic concept. Critical race theory. Oh, really? I'd like to enter into evidence Megan Geha.
Geha!
She's a special ed teacher at Des Moines East High School in Iowa. Here's some of her offerings on TikTok.
This is what's bullshit. Today is the first time our country has recognized Juneteenth as a national holiday, and yet I'm getting ready to go back to school in the fall, and my governor has put into place some ridiculous legislation that many governors across the country have put in place, such as I can't teach anything divisive, I can't teach critical race theory, and I can't teach about racial equity. This is at all public schools, colleges, and universities. So, teachers, in the past, we've been activists. After this show of last year, we really need to stand up and do what's right for our kids right now. So this is a call to action, teachers. We got to stand up and fight for our kids, because this is bull.
Not happening. Uh-huh. Yeah.
You know what my biggest fear is?
That she's
going to end up at CPS. And she's going to end up here in Illinois.
Yeah. She also does that Biden whispering thing, sort of, kind of, even on TikTok while she's walking around. She's breathlessly complaining about things as they are. She has been doing this for some time on TikTok, and we appreciate her, you know, not shrouding herself in secrecy. Come right out and share your views with the world. It's helpful.
Let me tell you a little bit about the population of my school. 51% of my students are Latinx, and many of them are undocumented, and many more have parents who are undocumented. So when they come into my classroom and see signs that say no human is illegal, they don't need to know who I voted for. I don't need to tell them. When my black students come into my classroom and see my Black Lives Matter posters, I don't need to tell them. When my LGBTQ plus students come in and see my pride flag, I don't need to tell them, because they know that I have used my critical thinking skills and have decided to vote for whoever is on the side of fighting for human rights.
Mm-hmm. Megan Gayha, special education teacher at Des Moines East High School, but really activist, and who is sounding the siren for teachers to do right, which is to ignore what Governor Reynolds has to say and to continue being tools of indoctrination at Des Moines East and everywhere else.
Before you see it on TV, share it on Facebook, or read about it in the paper, hear it here first. This is Chicago's Morning Answer on AM 560. The Answer. This is Chicago's Morning Answer with Dan Proft and Amy Jacobson on AM 560. The Answer.
Good Friday morning. Amy Jacobson here. Dan left early to play golf, or he thinks he's going to be playing golf, but I don't think that's going to happen today. Love and hot mic moment. This happened last week in Libertyville, I believe. They were having a school board meeting, and the superintendent, who was mic'd up at the time, didn't know people was listening, and he had a comment about masks.
You realize how difficult it is to breathe in these things until you don't have to wear them as much.
Okay, at this time, pursuant to the reopening phase 5 under the state of Illinois, any vaccinated individual, fully vaccinated individuals may remove their masks if they're comfortable. We still encourage all non-vaccinated individuals to follow the face covering protocol. This is only allowed in our meetings once all students are no longer in the room. Let us reflect that the honoree and her brother have left our meeting.
So, I don't know if you heard it, he said it's difficult to breathe in these things. I didn't realize how difficult it was because you don't wear them as much. With more on this and other pressing matters, let's welcome back to the program Paul Vallis, former superintendent of the Bridgeport Public Schools and the Recovery School District of Louisiana, former CEO of the School District of Philadelphia, and the former CEO of Chicago Public Schools. Good morning, Paul. How are you?
Fine, thank you. Good morning.
Did I leave anything out there when I was going over your resume?
Oh, my God. It's my mother's favorite resume.
Oh, I'm sure she loves it. All right, so let's start with the masks. What do you think school is going to look like in the fall, especially as it pertains to Chicago public school students?
Well, you know, I certainly hope that there's no sort of mask mandate. You just never know. I think the new superintendent, though, has a good reputation. Of course, he's the interim superintendent, and he's been pretty pragmatic in the jobs he's held from time to time, including the, I think, the Illinois Math Science Academy. So at the end of the day, you know, hopefully he'll bring some pragmatism to the school decision-making. But it's ridiculous to be now mandating that, at least in some districts, that even if they're not vaccinated, that they still, that those students still are required to walk around without a mask.
Right, because the kids and the children aren't a health threat. I mean, they're really not. And if you look at the numbers in Chicago, I just wanted to play this for you. This is Dr. Awarde. You know, how many are dead here in Chicago or have died since the pandemic began?
How many children 18 and younger have died from COVID in Chicago, and did they have comorbidities?
Three children under the age of 18 have died. That's available on the dashboard. They all had at least one comorbidity.
Okay. So, you know, and that was early on. And then I found out that these kids were hospitalized and had severe comorbidities.
That's right. Not only do they have, well, you know, let me point out that by contrast, at least last year, almost 90 students were at school age children in that same age group were actually murdered in the city of Chicago, and almost 600 were shot. So contrast that. I mean, and look, there are, I think, 18 or 19 students who were actually murdered during normal school hours. So these kids were killed during the time that schools are normally open. So if schools had not been, had been open during that period of time, you wonder how many of those students had not, would have not been shot in the city of Chicago.
But I just don't know logistically how we're going to go from, say, one or two kids in a high school classroom to back to normal. Because you've got to get rid of the health screeners. You've got to get rid of the temperature taking, because there's not enough time in the day to get, you know, say, like Lane Tech or Taft, to get all those kids through the doorway to start school on time. I mean, are we forward thinking here? Are we planning logistically for the fall?
You know, that's a good question. Certainly they haven't planned in the past. But let me give you an example of summer school. Now, you know, the district has received $2.5 billion since last December, both the Trump and the Biden COVID relief packages combined. Yet, and we all know that there's been enormous learning loss. We also know that the violence not only towards young people, but also by young people. I think 8%, I saw a stat. There was an article in the Tribune that said 8% of the murders in Chicago, 8% of shootings, over 40% of the carjackings have been committed by school-age children 17 years or younger. But yet the school district, despite the learning loss and despite the loss of and despite the danger, obviously the you know, the violence, they're opening summer school as if it's a normal summer school year. In fact, I believe that the high school instruction, the credit recovery instruction, is actually going to be remote. Oh. It's not going. You would think that you'd want to get these kids in safe and secure campuses, you know, off the streets and safe and secure campuses. But yet, the high school instruction over the summer is going to be remote. There's only 5% of the teachers, 1,200 teachers, are scheduled to teach summer school. 1,200 of the 22,000 teachers. So what does that tell you? Well, clearly, their priorities are not in the right place.
So remote learning is going to be part of our future for years to come? I mean, are we always going to have remote learning?
Look, I think all the classrooms should have the capacity to offer remote learning for students who are sick or students who legitimately are not in school. You know, if you have a synchronous learning classroom, you'll never have a student will never have a sick day. But there's no reason why schools cannot return to normal schedules. They should have returned to normal schedules last September, and we're going to be paying the price for this lost instructional year for a generation.
Now, what about school choice? Because I don't know if you saw, but in New Hampshire, they passed a bill yesterday giving parents school choice. So families are able to take their children's education dollars, actually, to education providers for choosing private school, tutoring, instructional materials, special needs services, and any other approved expenses. Do you think we could ever possibly get this in Illinois? I know you're a big advocate.
Probably not. I remember I testified on a bill where it was sponsored. The bill basically would have said during the peak of the COVID season, they would have said that if your local school is not offering in-school instruction, you could have a voucher to go to a private school, and it didn't even get out of committee. So we're behind the times. So, let me point out that our neighbor our neighboring state, Indiana, they just expanded their charter, their voucher program, and now 90% of the individuals who send their kids to who have school-age children, 90% of the families are not eligible for vouchers. Now, even though that many are eligible, I think only about, less than 10% participate. So it's not like there's this big exodus. But God knows, with the Chicago public schools losing students left and right for a variety of reasons, you know, they've lost enrollment for 17 consecutive years, people are voting with their feet. And it's for two reasons, two main reasons. One is the crime. And one is the lack of quality schools. So if you want to help, save the city, if you want to help keep the middle class from exiting the city, the city, only 16% of the families in Chicago are middle class families. In fact, there's been an exodus of over 260,000 blacks from the city of Chicago in the last decade, the largest black exodus of any city, including Detroit, and these And the exodus is an overwhelming middle-income and exodus, middle-income families with school-age children. So I think school choice is one of the things that could possibly save the city.
Is it too early to tell how many people left during the pandemic or kids that didn't sign on ever to remote learning? Because last I saw, it seemed like they lost about 100,000 students. Or is that aggressive?
District has lost, the district at the start of the year lost 15,000 students. And an even more frightening statistic is they lost 40% of their early childhood students. They lost 40% of their Black early childhood students and 30% of their Latino early childhood students. So that's not a healthy sign. Now, what the actual numbers were, I don't have updated numbers, but I will tell you, and it's well documented, that a large number of the student population, particularly at the high school level, while they may have still been on the roster, they were either not tuning in or they were tuning in and then like taking off, you know, where they would basically sign into the classroom and then they wouldn't necessarily sit through the remote classroom. So the district has been shy about putting out numbers, but I got to believe that the decline in enrollment at the end of the year was much greater than the 15,000 drop in enrollment at the beginning of the year.
Now, I've got some information from somebody who works over at Mather High School there on the northwest side. They were told Wednesday they were sent an email by the principal saying to prepare for a larger than normal classroom next fall because apparently the refugees from Mexico and Central America are being shipped to Chicago, and they're going to put them at Mather High School. Similar to what they did with Amundsen during the Bosnia-Herzegovina War, they brought a lot of people and they went to Amundsen High School, those refugees.
Yeah, you know, I haven't read anything. What you told me, that was the first time that I heard that there was that type of preparation. Usually a lot of times you can hear things like that through the grapevine. It's not surprising that obviously they would be pushing an expansion of enrollment by obviously enrolling as many children as they can, because as I pointed out, the district has fewer students today than they had when the Germans were invading France in World War One. It hasn't been until 1914 since the enrollment has been this low. And as I've mentioned, there are 100,000 fewer students in the school system today than there were at CEO back in the old days, 2001. So clearly, the district is significantly losing students at a rate that far exceeds the loss of city population, and that's not a healthy thing. So if they're aggressively, obviously recruiting or trying to expand their enrollment, you know, their state aid is based on their enrollment. It's based on the number of students that they have, as well as student attendance, the average daily attendance. So it wouldn't surprise me.
All right, Paul, hold on the line. We're going to take a break here. And when we come back, we're going to talk about Mayor Lightfoot, crime in the city, and the Bears possibly moving to Arlington Heights.
Connect with Dan and Amy on the AM 560 The Answer mobile app. Just text the word app to 64636 to download the app today.
All right, as you know, Mike Scott, father of four, and he still has a daughter in high school. Have they made any plans for your daughter's high school about masks or social distancing or any of that stuff?
Tentatively. I think the plan that we're seeing come together is one that may allow for some masking in certain situations, not outside, certainly not in sports. And I think that goes for most of the suburbs as well, too.
But are you guys going to have remote learning?
No, I think it's going to be offered, but it's going to be what
you have
was
to prove that
offered.
You actually have a comorbidity.
No, not necessarily.
Because for CPS, you do.
Do you?
Yep.
The hybrid model that was going to be in place for several suburban school districts on the high school level went to a private organization who put together a plan for the school. But you had to use that exclusively. There was going to be no asynchronous learning, no live video, live teacher to video teaching. It was the private school's learning, or the private organization's learning. And I'm I'm seeing that that may be a possibility this afternoon for some who may choose to be on the outside looking in. But I'm not hearing that from parents. I'm hearing from parents
that we're going back.
Several school districts in and around us that not only are they going back, they're not only ready to go back, but they're going to demand that students go back.
Yeah, and Barrington, that school district, there only one person signed up for remote learning for the whole. So they're not going to cater to that one person, which is good. Somebody's finally waking up. All right, thanks, Mike. Now let's go back to Paul Vallis, who joins us on our Turnkey.pro answer line. Paul, I thought of you when the, Mayor Lightfoot got in a little tiss-tiss with two of the aldermen. I'm sure you heard about it.
I have considered your appeal, and I've denied it. We're going to Alderman Harris.
But you know, Paul, it wasn't as fun as the Harold Washington days. Remember that? Here's a 50th Ward Alderman Bernard Stone.
How dare you come in here, you little pipsqueak? How dare you come in here?
Oh, wasn't that fun back then?
It was. It was a lot of fun back. And, you know, there were unruly city councils in those days, too. I remember as budget director, the mayor actually lost his budget before the city council. And in fact, it was one of the reasons I became budget director from revenue director was the mayor had been frustrated over a series of defeats by the council, and he decided to shake up his administration. So, yeah, there's been, but look, the problems that the city is facing, look, we have a huge increase in murders on Monday, following an extremely violent weekend. You would think that the council would be spending its time focusing and debating that issue, or for that matter, asking fundamental questions like why after the learning loss, why after the violence inflicted on children and by children, is the school district running a summer school program that is in effect like the normal summer school program you would run as if we have not had school campuses closed for 15 months. But no, there are just, it's about personalities and it's about debating side issues like the renaming of DuSable or whether or not someone, whether or not the police raid, they should pay out $1.5 million in damages to the woman who was victimized for $3 million. I mean, that's the stuff that they're focusing on when literally the city is burning.
It is. And crime is up. I mean, people are scaling down the Chicago bridges to break into restaurants on the Riverwalk. Last night in the 16th, 17th district, people were walking into restaurants and holding up the chefs at gunpoint and taking their personal items and walking out. And there's not enough police officers because so many are retiring, because why would you want to be a police officer in this day and age? There's such a lack of respect.
Well, not only, and Amy, I'll tell you, not only are there serious problems in terms of attrition, not only are there serious problems because of attrition. Amy, are you there?
Yeah, I'm here. I can hear you.
Oh, sorry about that. Sorry, I apologize. My alarm actually went off. That was my alarm to wake up to do the
show.
Well,
you should get up earlier, Paul.
I know. I don't have. I'm a late. I go to bed very late at night. But not only is there a problem of attrition, but the strategy is a failed strategy. They pulled 1,400 police officers from the local districts, and they've created these two massive citywide units that they deploy in kind of a shock and awe approach when they have violent to deal with the violent hotspots. Most of the time, the police are just sitting in cars with their lights flashing. It's called scarecrow patrols. So not only do we have a significant number of vacancies that have not been filled because they're retiring at record rates, but they have stripped the local police districts of 1,400 officers. So you have beats that are not covered by a beat car, and you don't have backup. In some of the most violent communities, you don't have beats being covered. And Brown, the other day when he had his press conference, he tried to argue that not having the backup or not having beat cars for every beat, et cetera, was normal. It's anything but normal, and we're seeing it in the record, not only in last year's record increase in murders and in shootings, but this year those numbers are up even above last year's record levels. So it's
we're up against the clock here, Paul. But real quickly, I wanted to ask you about
Soldier Field and the Chicago Bears possibly moving to Arlington Heights? Because you had a pretty strong tweet out about that.
Well, look, if the Chicago Bears, we built the spaceship on the lakefront for the Chicago Bears. In today's dollars, the subsidy, the total mostly publicly financed stadium was close to $1 billion in today's dollars. If the Bears are now going to hold us hostage, and you know, they should have done a retractable dome so they could have more than a couple dozen events at the stadium. But if they're going to move to Arlington, I think they should give us a refund. And, I think their rent, the amount of rent that they pay to the Park District right now is what they pay, I think, one of their outside linebackers. But if they're going to move to Arlington, I think we should demand that they take the Chicago off the Bears and they can call themselves the Arlington Heights Bears.
All right, we'll send them a bill. All right, Paul Vallis, thank you so much for joining us and have a great weekend.
Thank you.
Thanks. And Paul Vallis joined us on our turnkey.pro answer line.
It's like a hot, steaming cup of information to start your day. It's Chicago's Morning Answer on AM 560, The Answer.
Open mic! Open mic Friday! Calling now! Open mic Friday!
Open mic Friday, grab a line, 312-642-5600. Tell me what's on your mind, tell us. What's on your mind? I have to get this off my chest because all these new incentives to get vaccinated, to get our kids vaccinated, the group that they need to get vaccinated most, 18 to 26-year-olds, and what better way to do it than with free Lollapalooza tickets?
So this Saturday, there are 1,200 free single-day passes, and big thanks to Lollapalooza and C3, the organizers, for making these available. The four city sites that will be open on Saturday, these are four of our pods, are Wilbur Wright College, Richard J. Daley College, Kennedy King College, and Malcolm X College. And I'll refer you to chicago.gov/COVIDVax for the details. But the idea is you go to one of these sites to get the pass for that day. So if I want to see the Thursday lineup, July 29th at Lollapalooza, I go to Wilbur Wright College on Saturday to get my COVID vaccine.
You got that, guys? There's also $10 million worth of lottery money that they're giving away. Three people are going to get $1 million, and then the rest, 40 people, could win $100,000. But they keep scaring us. If you don't get vaccinated, the Delta is going to come and get you.
The Delta variant is currently the greatest threat in the U.S. to our attempt to eliminate COVID-19.
We're not ever going to eradicate COVID. It is here forever, just like the flu, just like a common cold. But they continue to try to pound that home that we're going to die if we don't get the vaccine.
We don't have enough population immunity to stop the spread of this virus, and we seem to have hit a wall. So when the winter hits, you're going to see more suffering and more hospitalization and more death. And because children are particularly vulnerable, because many haven't been vaccinated, I think they will likely suffer greatly.
They will likely suffer greatly. And what does that mean? That means if there's a spike in the numbers, we could be locked down again and kids could be learning remotely. And we cannot let that happen. Parents, our number one job is to take care of our children and protect them. And we rolled over collectively as a society, rolled over to big government, didn't even question, didn't push back. But if it happens again, we have got to push back. Now, before we get to your phone calls real quick, Dr. Awardi, I was with her the other day, 70 Delta variant. You know how there's Delta variants now? That's the predominant thing, the buzzword. We have 70 cases here in Chicago.
The majority not, I know. Yes. I don't have.
Real quickly, I asked her how many of those 70 people that you just mentioned, how many are hospitalized?
The majority not, I know. I don't have those exact numbers in front of me right now, but the majority have not been hospitalized. And there are still questions actually outstanding about whether the Delta variant makes people sicker or whether it is just more infectious, more contagious. We know that it is more contagious, and the kinds of mutations that it has, there's a few different mutations on the spike protein itself, makes us concerned that if we see further mutations from that, we could
could have problems with vaccine in the future. But the great majority, at least I know for a fact, have not been hospitalized. And again, the great majority of the people who have been diagnosed are people who are not vaccinated.
And the new study that's out today found that 100%, are you ready? 100% of COVID-19 deaths happened to people who were not vaccinated. Anyone buying that? 312-642-5600. Turnkey.pro. Answer line 64636. Type in DA, then a quick comment. Open Mic Friday. Who's the first to do? Let's go to Monica in Lyle. I think you have some good news for us.
Yes, I do. March 5th of last year, I was let go from my job, and my world kind of felt really crummy at that time. However, I have good news to report. I am back with my old company. I am contracting with them, so it's maybe temporary, but with the way things are looking right now, especially in the trade show business, I may be coming back on board full time, hopefully.
Congratulations. So you're in the trade show industry?
Yes. Yes. We make trade show booths mostly for companies. Yeah.
Oh, that's
for different
great.
Trade shows.
Congratulations. Did you get a good night's sleep last night then?
Oh, relatively speaking, I was up watching Marvel movies. So, but other than that, yeah.
All right. Thanks, Monica. Congratulations.
Okay.
Good for you. Good news on a Friday. Let's go to, Kathleen in Avalon Park. Hello, friend. How are you?
Hey, good morning, Amy. Hey, congrats to Monica. That's outstanding.
I know. It's great.
Yes. Good news is good. Sorry to rain on your parade. I'm going from the good news to give you a little piece of my mind there.
Okay, let's go. I'm ready, Kathleen.
Okay. Regarding what you said about the kids going to Mather from Mexico and Central America, with all due respect, they are not refugees. They are illegal aliens. And to compare them to the refugees from the war in the Balkans, I think is rather insulting and at least very inaccurate and not a fair comparison.
Oh, I understand, but can I tell you that it says that in the email that every teacher at Mather High School got? It said, we are having an influx, so be prepared for an influx of student next year. We are taking in refugees, exactly what it says, from Mexico and from Central America that are being sent to Chicago. And I heard there's between 3,000 to 5,000 people that are coming here. I don't know where they're going to live, but they're going to live in Chicago because they're going to go to Chicago Public High Schools.
Okay. Well, then I should not have said that I'm calling you out since you were quoting from a letter, but you said it as though you were speaking. So I didn't know.
Oh, no. That's
but of course, CPS will use because they're in the propaganda business. And of course, they want to manipulate the heartstrings rather than have people use their brains and think. Quick second point regarding the shooting on 87th Street yesterday out in public in the middle of the afternoon.
Yeah, where was that 87th and the Dan Ryan or I-57? No, that was
no,
Dan Ryan.
That was yeah, it was at the Dan Ryan, but they have the signs that say 94 and 57 because the split that goes to 94 East to Indiana and 57 to Memphis is right there. So people getting on will know that they're hitting a fork in the expressway at the Dan Ryan. So 87th Street, I get off there all the time to go to Starbucks in the afternoon for a break. And there's a Chipotle over there, T-Mobile, Wendy's, Marshall's. I mean, it's a huge shopping area. And to have that happen in broad daylight is very scary.
And tell people where they could see it. Tell people what's your Twitter handle so they can see that.
Well, no, it's on CWB Chicago. And that's a great, great website for people to find information that they're not going to get in the regular news about what's happening in Chicago. But quickly, I don't want to talk too long because I know you have other people. I just want to say I think the only way we're going to solve this problem, it's not through regular people like me talking to my alderman or tweeting the mayor or writing a letter to the mayor, because she ignores law-abiding people like me. And my alderman, Michelle Harris, keeps saying that crime is down. So I have no hope there. But when the business community gets together and the people with the money sign on and demand the resignation of Fox and Brown and Lightfoot, that's the only thing that's going to work. It's got to be the people who support the tax base and that's the folks with the money, or the city council has to come up with a majority of 26 to demand the mayor's resignation, or at least Kim Fox or Brown. That's the only solution I can see.
Yeah, and Kathleen, can you please be safe out there?
I'll do my best.
I worry about you every day.
Yeah, living on the South Side is, you know, you're taking your life in your hands every time you go outside. But I have a great block with great neighbors. We get up and go to work every day. We take care of our property, and we look out for each other. So,
good. That's what it's
you know,
all about.
But for the grace of God, that's all we can do. And quite honestly, with Chicago now, it's every neighborhood, and mm-hmm. it's day or night. So it's not just the South and West Sides anymore. And folks got to wake up and realize that the criminals own these streets, and we have no support in City Hall. All right, to your next caller.
Thanks,
have
Kathleen.
A great weekend.
All right, God bless.
Terrific show this week.
Thanks.
Ciao, babe.
Bye. All right, let's go to Bob in Buffalo Grove. He wants to talk. He's our resident structural engineer, I think. Or are you a mechanical engineer? Are you electronic? What are you, Bob?
I'm a structural.
Okay, so
worked on Chicago high-rises.
All right, well, what in God's name happened in Miami? I mean, we have 159 people unaccounted for, 120 accounted for. It just breaks your heart when you see that, because there was no earthquake. I don't know if there was a sinkhole. I mean, what do you think it could have been?
Well, right, it's funny you should contact me today, because I just got a message from one of my colleagues who's a foundation expert, and he just said it's still too early in the game to know what actually transpired, whether it was the foundations or there was an issue with the actual structure. But we do know what I've even read in the papers, you've probably read, the building had been sinking,
right,
and it had been going on for years.
Right, was it 2 centimeters every year or every 5 years?
Yeah. But a lot of buildings settle. I mean, there's buildings in Chicago that have settled 3 feet. I mean, we're talking landmark buildings. So we got to figure out, it's going to take time. You know, nearby was that failure of that pedestrian bridge. It took literally months for the engineers to go over the design, the construction, and they finally figured out what took place there.
Well, what did take place there? Do you remember?
Yeah, it was the engineers and the contractors, the way they actually built it, there was a construction joint, and the engineer didn't account for the way the forces get transmitted through the construction joint. And it literally sheared off the connection. And since that was a truss, like I talked to children on this at various STEM functions, a truss is a series of triangles, and if you remove one of the triangles, or one of the legs in the triangle, the structure fails.
Okay.
It doesn't have any redundancy. That's the same thing that happened in Minneapolis. On a similar note, or a side note, I just got word they figured out how they're going to fix the building in San Francisco. I don't know if you've ever heard of the new Leaning Tower of San Francisco, but there's a multi-million dollar, 800-foot building in New York, in San Francisco, that's leaning. Yeah. It even made the news on 60 Minutes, and they finally figured out how they're going to actually redo the foundations on that building.
Okay.
And because of that particular issue with that building leaning, they've changed the building code in San Francisco that they have to now go down to bedrock. Mm-hmm. So that's the other issue with the building in Florida. I'm just wondering what the foundation system was.
Well, they said it's a salty area, obviously. The ocean
yeah,
right there,
but
in shifty beachfront environment is always
problematic. But how far, you know, when you build a high rise, even in Chicago, depending on how tall it is, you go 70, 80, for the really tall ones, we go down 100 feet to hit bedrock.
Wow.
So the big, tall buildings are going down 100 feet down to hit rock. So all of this will be resolved in time, but it's going to take time for the engineers to go through the rubble.
Yep.
And see what happened with the foundations, what happened with the structure.
All right. Now, Bob, you know what your new title is? Your new title could be forensic engineer.
That's a real big specialty, but I've seen some crazy things in terms of failures.
Well, Oh, I'm sure. Well, thanks, Bob, for the phone call.
Have a good golf game on Monday. I saw your braces off.
Yeah, it's going to be great. It'll be my first time golfing in a year. What could go wrong, Bob? Thank you. Thanks, Bob.
Take care. Have a good weekend.
You too, dear. Let's go to Will in Skokie. You're on Chicago's Morning Answer. Good morning, Will.
Good morning. With regards to President Biden's comments about, you know, people don't have guns because they can protect themselves from the government. And, oh, gee, you need nuclear weapons
and cannons.
Right. I'm reminded back when the Tiananmen Square riots happened and started to have revolution in China, the people got run over by tank treads. In Russia, on the other hand, when you had the Second Russian Revolution with Boris Yeltsin and Moscow, they stood up to the Russian Red Army. The Red Army just didn't fire on the people. And I think that's the way the United States government would be. You also have to remember that we are the most armed country in the world as far as our citizenry. The Afghans have held off the major world powers for something like 4 or 5 centuries. Nobody's really ever conquered Afghanistan. If you have an armed citizenry and if nothing else, go look at the movie Red Dawn. I know it's just a movie, but it's...
Oh, I've watched it again and again. It's good. Thanks, okay. Will. We're going to try to squeeze in real quickly. Let's do this real as fast as we can. Terry in Rogers Park.
I think another way public schools are indoctrinating our children is they promote their preference of the Democrat Party. When there's an election going on, teachers shouldn't be telling children who they hope wins, or displaying pictures of only their favored political candidates in school halls and classrooms.
Yeah. All right. Thanks, Terry, for the phone call. I agree. Eduardo in Midway, you're on Chicago's Morning Answer.
Yeah, mine's quick. They had a Tribune article here about women bypassing motherhood for careers.
Yeah, it's been happening for centuries. But yeah, what about it, Eduardo? Okay, well, Eduardo left us. Thank you, Eduardo. All right, last but not least, the one, the only, my dancing partner, Chuck from Delavan, Wisconsin. Oh, hi.
First time caller, long time listener. Hey, they're worried about this new disease and it's going to start crossing borders and stuff. So
the Delta, Chuck. It's the Delta. The Delta.
Yeah, so it's a different whatever. So I'm a whitetail buck deer. I'm in Harvard, Illinois, and I go 2 miles and I cross into Wisconsin, and I get shot. Was I a Wisconsin buck or was I an Illinois buck?
Hey.
So how does the coronavirus know where the state line is? And why are we playing these silly games to this stuff that really doesn't exist?
Good point, Chuck. Hey, Chuck, have a great weekend.
There's only one radio show in Chicago talking about today's biggest stories and telling you what they really mean. That show is this one. Chicago's Morning Answer on AM 560, The Answer.